Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr. and Susan Shand. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, last week, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo rejected China's claims to most of the South China Sea as unlawful. In a statement, he said the U.S. seek to preserve peace and stability, uphold freedom of the seas in a manner consistent with international law. He added, the U.S. would oppose any attempt to use threat or force to settle disputes. Later in the week, Pompeo added that he would consider protecting other countries against China through legal means. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State David Stilwell also suggested at a conference last week that sanctions could be placed on Chinese officials over the issue. China has territorial disputes with Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam over the South China Sea, a part of the Pacific Ocean rich in resources. All of them have weaker militaries than China. The U.S. has long opposed China's growing territorial claims. And American warships have regularly sailed in the important waterway to demonstrate freedom of movement there. Yet the comments represent a stronger U.S. position on China's claims over most of the South China Sea. However, only Taiwan welcomed the U.S. statement. Other governments avoided making direct comment. And Malaysia's foreign ministry chose not to say anything. Colin Koh is a maritime security research expert at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. He said countries in the area will be watching for additional steps. It will really make Southeast Asia sit up and take notice if there are real concrete actions that follow soon after the recent Pompeo statement, said Koh. Wintan Chung is director of the Center for International Studies at the University of Social Sciences and Humanities in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. He said Vietnam, which needs China as a trading partner, probably welcomes Pompeo's plan. But he said Vietnam likely hopes not to be singled out as a protected country. He added, I think that they hope the U.S. can confront China unilaterally or with some other allies. Stephen Nagy is a senior associate professor of politics and international studies at International Christian University in Tokyo. He said U.S. officials will probably only answer to major issues involving China without increasing a conflict. The U.S. government would ignore local fishing disputes and arguments over placement of oil production structures, he said. American officials might consider answering Chinese ship movements in waters claimed by other countries. This year, Chinese research ships have tested waters claimed by Malaysia and Vietnam. Nagy said, it's a very difficult line to walk between putting significant pressure back on the Chinese without it spiraling into a kinetic conflict.
The rainy season has begun in South and Southeast Asia. Farmers and fishermen are hopeful for wet weather after a long period of below normal rainfall. This year, the Mekong River, Southeast Asia's longest, has reached its lowest levels since record-keeping began 60 years ago. The Mekong River Commission studies the river and its use. It said rainfall over the lower Mekong Basin was about 68% lower than in May 2019. The area includes parts of Myanmar, Laos, Thailand, Cambodia, and Vietnam. The situation worsened in June. In its latest yearly report, the MRC said lower Mekong countries needed to carefully study extreme weather events like droughts. Flood and drought have hit our region hard lately and require stronger regional collaboration, said MRC Chief An Pichada of Cambodia. He added that nations needed to have good quality and timely information on water sharing. About 70 million people depend on the Mekong for their livelihoods and food. Among them is Man Li He, who has worked on the waters of the Mekong River for 40 years. He is upset by the building of dams in northern Cambodia, Laos, and China. The reason why there is no fish is because of the new dams, which blocked the river flow, and the water levels are going up and down 3 or 4 times a month, depending on whether the dams are open or closed. He noted, "This rainy season, there has been no rain." Scientists have also linked the drought to the climate event known as the Indian Ocean Dipole, when the ocean experiences unusual temperature changes. Colder than average surface temperatures in the eastern half of the Indian Ocean cause less rainfall in Southeast Asia. Scientists say the warming of the Earth intensifies the dipole. The changing weather patterns are creating hardship and forcing people to change the way they live. My family wakes up at 2 a.m. to buy fish at Chang Chamras Fish Market, and then we sell it in the Kandal Market. I buy fish because there are no fish in the river, said Yan, a former fisherman. The drought has hurt the 850 kinds of fish in the lower Mekong. Many water animals in the area, like the Irrawaddy dolphin and the giant catfish, are endangered. Record low water levels and falling fish catches, however, have failed to change the minds of Laotian officials in Vientiane. They continue to support hydroelectric dam building and hope to turn the landlocked country into the battery of Asia. Laos recently announced it would move ahead with its third dam across the Mekong at Pak Bang. The project is to cost $1.88 billion. The huge $3.8 billion dam at Sayaburi went into full operation last October. There are about 140 dams planned for the main stream of the Mekong and its connected waterways. Most are in China. But Chinese officials deny the dams are hurting water levels on the lower river. A report by the research company Eyes on Earth Incorporated found that China has been restricting the Mekong's natural water flow. It has done this with many dams on the upper part of the river. However, China denies that its dams affect water levels. Brian Eiler is an expert with the Stimson Center, a research group. When drought sets in, China effectively controls the flow of the river, he said. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
What gives some people immunity from the novel coronavirus, the virus that causes COVID-19? Some scientists are studying whether it is the presence of antibodies. Others are studying a part of the human immune system known as T cells, which can protect people from viruses. Recent studies show that some recovered patients who tested negative for coronavirus antibodies developed T cells in their immune systems. The reaction is believed to be the result of their COVID-19 infection. The studies are small and have yet to be confirmed by outside experts. However, some scientists now say that people who show few signs of sickness from the new coronavirus or show no signs at all may be actually killing off the infection with their T cells. The findings add to the evidence that an effective COVID-19 vaccine will need to push T cells to work in addition to producing antibodies. This may also affect several treatments that are being developed. The recent findings may explain how immunity to the virus might work. Dr. Alessandro Sette is studying the reaction to the coronavirus at the La Jolla Institute's Infectious Disease and Vaccine Center in California. He said there is growing evidence that people exposed to the virus have a transient antibody response, or they have a T cell response without creating antibodies. When a virus gets past the body's infection-fighting white blood cells, another defense reaction starts. It causes the production of cells that attack the invading virus. The defense includes antibodies that can identify the virus and lock onto it, preventing its entry into a person's cells. The body's defense also can include T cells that can kill both invaders and the cells they have infected. The world is now 6 months into the COVID-19 outbreak. The coronavirus has infected more than 12 million people. But scientists are not sure whether the antibody reaction to the virus infection is strong or lasts over time. Some scientists think this could mean T cells have an important job protecting humans against illness. T cells are often important in controlling viral infections. We are seeing evidence of that, John Weary told Reuters. He is a director of the University of Pennsylvania's Institute for Immunology. Reuters reports that a recent small French study that has not yet been confirmed by experts examined immunity in family members. It found that 6 out of 8 family members in close contact with relatives who had COVID-19 developed a T-cell response. Importantly, tests did not show that they had coronavirus antibodies. A Swedish study of about 200 people had similar results. It found a strong T-cell response in most individuals who had few or no signs of sickness following coronavirus infection. The T-cells were present whether or not any antibody response was found. Examining T-cell responses could also help explain longer-term immunity. There is some evidence that T-cells developed after exposure to other coronaviruses which cause the common cold could help fight off the new virus. The new virus is also known as SARS-CoV-2. A study by the La Jolla Institute found T-cells that reacted to SARS-CoV-2 in about half of stored blood samples collected between 2015 and 2018. That might mean that earlier infections with the common cold coronaviruses might help protect against the new virus. It is a potentially encouraging piece of evidence, Weary said. The current vaccine candidates against COVID-19 aim to create antibody and T-cell responses. The recent findings suggest the importance of the T-cell response in human medical tests. We believe that the optimal vaccine design would be one with both an antibody and T-cell response, Sete said. After an infection or vaccination, the immune system keeps a number of memory cells that are ready to quickly attack the same virus in case of a future infection. Many countries are using blood tests that look for antibodies to estimate how many people have been infected. But measuring memory T cells is much more difficult. It also remains unclear what combination of immune system cells will result in the best protection from the virus. It is a lot easier to collect antibody data, said Daniela Weisskopf. She is an assistant professor at the La Jolla Institute. I'm Susan Shand.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about William Howard Taft, who took office in 1909. In some ways, the story of Taft's presidency is also a story about Theodore Roosevelt's presidency. Roosevelt had been president for the 8 years before Taft. The two men were friends. Roosevelt was even a mentor to Taft. But the two men were very different. Roosevelt was energetic, both in his physical abilities and in his use of executive power. His vision for the country was progressive. In contrast, Taft was a more conservative, heavy man who fell asleep in meetings and who did not make decisions quickly. In fact, Americans often remember Taft because of his size. His weight changed frequently, but as president, Taft usually weighed about 135 kilograms. One popular story claims that Taft got stuck in a White House bathtub. This story is not true. However, it is true that Taft had a special bathtub made for him. Several men could sit comfortably in it. As president, Taft did continue some of Roosevelt's reforms, but in a more orderly way. He also took some actions that contradicted Roosevelt's wishes. In 4 years, the two men had gone from political allies to competitors for the White House. Taft was another president who was born in the state of Ohio. He grew up in the city of Cincinnati, along with five siblings. Taft's father was a well-known lawyer, public official, and diplomat. He was an advisor to President Ulysses Grant. His mother was an intelligent, independent woman who also worked for the public good. The Tafts had high expectations for their son. He became an excellent student, who went on to study at Yale, and then the University of Cincinnati Law School. Taft sought a career path that he hoped would lead him one day to the U.S. Supreme Court. He worked as a lawyer and then as a judge in Ohio. Along the way, he met Theodore Roosevelt. Roosevelt helped Taft advance his career as a judge. But one person was not happy about the career move: Taft's wife. Taft had married an intelligent, independent woman named Helen Herron, known as Nellie. She had always wanted to be First Lady, and she urged her husband to follow a path toward the White House. In time, Nellie Taft had her wish. In 1900, President William McKinley offered Taft a position in the Philippines. The islands had come under the control of the United States after the Spanish-American War. McKinley wanted Taft to help prepare the Philippines to be ruled by civilians instead of by soldiers. Taft worried he would not like the job. However, he knew that it was a good chance to build a political career. Taft was right about that, but he was wrong about disliking the job. He enjoyed it so much that he turned down two offers to return to the U.S. and serve on the Supreme Court. In the Philippines, Taft successfully established courts, schools, a transportation network, and a healthcare system. Taft did have pejorative views about the people who lived there. He did not think they were yet capable of governing themselves. But he performed his job as Governor General effectively. Taft might have even stayed in the Philippines if it were not for his friend, Theodore Roosevelt. In 1901, Roosevelt became president. He asked Taft to become his Secretary of War. Taft agreed, partly so he could continue to supervise the Philippines, but the job also put him in a position to become president himself. William Taft did not really want to be president, but Theodore Roosevelt and Nellie Taft wanted him to be. During the election of 1908, Taft permitted Roosevelt to do most of the campaigning for him. He spent a lot of time golfing. Taft was the first president to be strongly linked, so to speak, to the sport of golfing. Another word for golf course is links. Yet voters approved of Taft. They likely hoped he would continue the reforms of Roosevelt. He won the election easily. Once in the White House, however, Taft did several things that reversed Roosevelt's positions. First, Taft signed a bill that did not reduce tariffs as much as many progressive activists wanted. Then, Taft removed one of Roosevelt's friends from a government position. Taft believed he was correct in making the move, but Roosevelt and many other Republicans were furious. Some historians say they did not give Taft enough credit for the many reforms he did make. His government pursued a large number of antitrust suits against big businesses. It also advanced two constitutional amendments, one to establish a federal income tax and another to permit voters to elect senators directly. As the end of Taft's term in the White House came near, the Republican Party was divided. At their 1912 convention, a majority of delegates nominated Taft for president again, but a number left the meeting in anger. They created a new group called the Progressive Party and nominated as their candidate Theodore Roosevelt. Taft and Roosevelt, along with the Democratic Party candidate, fought a bitter campaign during 1912. Of the three, Taft came in last. Roosevelt came in second. The divided Republicans had given control of the White House to the Democratic candidate, Woodrow Wilson. Happily for him, Taft's story does not end there. Taft taught at Yale University Law School for a while. Then, when a Republican took the White House again, President Warren Harding appointed Taft as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He is the only person to lead both the executive and judicial branches of the U.S. government. Taft was clear about which one he favored. He was much more comfortable as a justice than he was as president. One journalist at the time described Chief Justice Taft as a smiling Buddha, placid, wise, gentle, sweet. He even lost weight. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.